Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, and here we go. It is the 30th day of September, 2016, the final day of September. We are running downhill to beat the Swede and to finish off Larry's dollar at a time challenge as we wipe out and send off into the memory hole the idea of September, 2016. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I heartily invite you to jump into the chat room where the merrymaking is frolicsome, rollicking, and real time. I'd jump in there if the computer would let me. Maybe it will somewhere down along. It's just a matter of maybe it deciding to cooperate with me or me deciding. Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Waiting.
Oh, by the way, this is the 25th anniversary? Yeah, this is the, Michael and Madison reminded me. It's the 25th anniversary of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. So there's our obligatory Star Trek reference to get that out of the way for the beginning of the evening. Yes. Okay. It is, of course, Friday on the Front Porch. That means in about, 58 minutes or so, 57 minutes or so, we will convene the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what's on folks' minds. I'm looking forward to it. I always look forward to these Fridays. So that'll happen. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch and you would like to, you are more than welcome to jump aboard. Just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. One word, Sparky Dunk, on Skype. And mention Friday on the Front Porch, the horn, something like that. Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Just something to let him know that you're for real and not a fisher or a hacker or what have you. And he'll show you. He'll put out the breadcrumb trail for you and show you where we shine the Bob signal up against the clouds. So welcome, one and all. As far as fundraising goes, we've got less than an ordinary night's fundraising to do. Thank you very kindly to Tony, who took care of last night's overage earlier in the day. He said, "Howdy from California. I just kicked in $100 to the horn via PayPal to help even out yesterday's shortfall so you have a decent chance of beating the Swede and hopefully fulfill any current matching challenges. That, and to be honest, I can't wait to try the 2 pounds of wild rice you're sending out for my donation. Yeah, you will enjoy it. Thanks and keep up with the good work with the show. It helps keep me grounded at times. Your commentary and that of the various members of the horn extended family, though at times running counter to my thoughts, I find enlightening and interesting and helps me to consider my points of view as compared to others. I guess the one thing that has kept me listening for over 10 years has been the humanity of yourself and the Horn family. Probably to a person in the Horn community, the decent people, good folk, who try to live the better parts of our nature. I consider myself fortunate to stand with y'all against the trumps of this world. And Tony, we are mighty pleased to stand with you. It's a like I've said before, it's a wonderful little community y'all have built. And it's an inspiration each and every day. So yes, we have less than we've got less than $200 to raise this evening. In fact, it's more like 196. $196 to raise, and since Tony mentioned catching up with any current matching challenges, granted it was not $101 contributions, but I think it's safe to declare Larry's challenge met as well. Hopefully Larry will agree. And so there we are, $196, and we're done with September. The Swede is beaten, the challenges are met, and we can stride boldly into October. Yeah? Yeah. So, do let's, shall we? And, no, I'm still not in the chat room, because the computer still isn't letting me into the chat room. Hot diggity. Note coming in from Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker. Guess who's sitting in the luxury of her own home mocking the phone company? Mock them, Carol. Mock them relentlessly. Mock them ruthlessly. Mock them without mercy. God knows they need it. I'm still at war with Verizon. Had a lovely little chat with the Consumer Product Safety Commission earlier today. Yeah. Somebody needs to win a battle against these bastards, and if there's anybody who can, my money says it's Carol Baker. Let's see what else here. In the far frozen north, we will not be hearing from Ron for a couple of days. He's off into the even further north in search of stalking the elusive muskie. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm in the chat room. Hot diggity damn! thank you, ancient computer. Thank you very much. So you can jump in there, too, where you'll be met by Dwayne and Anatole and Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgia Stan, and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, having folded space because he's a third-stage guild navigator, has become man cave this evening. And I'm even told that for people in the Skype group, there will be pasture cam today from Shay Sparky. Pasture cam. Did I not do the "Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid" part? Because Jug of Punch in the chat room just said, "Who is this that is talking?" Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Mm-hmm. And Carol has given him what for, her two dented tomato cans and a string ISP out there, you know, Hooterville can and string. They didn't move, she says, until I gave them a copy of the complaint I filed with Fox 4 Problem Solvers, my state representative, and the Public Utilities Commission. They managed to find and fix the problem within the hour. Praise the Lord! Does that mean you've been struck up by the Lord? Since when it struck down, so I guess you're struck up. Mm-hmm. Right? Early note in from Steve in New York. Stop telling me how to vote, Bob! Damn it. Okay, you were the first one with the stop telling me, so... That gets a cowbell. Absolutely. Where do you want to go this evening? We got some loose ends we can wrap up. We can, of course, because everyone must, talk about Donald Trump. We can discuss the fact that But the question, yeah, he's coming unglued some more. And that still means that at least 40% of the people in this country will vote for him, because they wouldn't. He was right. He could be seen murdering people in the middle of Fifth Avenue or, you know, Main Street, anywhere, any town USA. And there's 40% of America, and they are. They're deplorable. Who could not be convinced otherwise. Just is what it is, I guess. But the his propensity for fat shaming, coupled with his ardent desire to bellyache and piss and moan, I mean, about the treatment that he received. My God, Lester Holt could have muted him 20 times in the first 2 minutes. Okay, 10. And instead, he just, you know, took a snooze. But no, poor Benito Cheeto was ill-treated by Lester Holt. And now people are being mean to him about women, when all he was doing was pointing out how disgusting Alicia Machado was. And that wasn't fair, damn it. Your heart just kind of bleeds for him, doesn't it? Yeah, no, mine neither. So that's a possibility. Oh, remember the story I mentioned earlier this week about the genius who set fire to the toilet paper oak tree in Auburn, Alabama? Well, folks down there are still dealing with that. No, this is not earth-shattering news. This is just a quick follow-up, because the goddess of irony wanted me to know that there was a follow-up to be had. Remember, in the course of talking about that story, I mentioned that a few years ago, some asshat had come along and poisoned the previous Tumor's Corner oak tree. Well, the guy who did that is a fellow named Harvey Updike. And it was 2010 when he poisoned those trees. And he's still paying for them. And he may well be paying for them for the rest of his life, and maybe into, I don't know, maybe his grandkids, his great-grandchildren. Harvey Updike has a remaining balance on the trees that he poisoned of $793,852.98. He makes a $100 payment every month to the Elmore County Clerk's Office in Elmore County, Alabama. Those are some expensive trees. That's what happened. And the latest guy, the guy who burnt the trees, remember, he's been charged with desecration of a venerable object. Yeah, they're tree worshiping in Alabama now. Mm-hmm. So that just, you know, that's nothing. It's just a little update. Serious stuff. Things from earlier in the week that I didn't quite get around to. Just things that sort of, important stories, we just sort of get sidetracked sometimes. And one of those is something that popped up out of Missouri Stan. You know, we still have a passion in this country for killing people in the name of the state. We try to dress it up and call it capital punishment and talk about justice and such things as, like, yeah. But no, we're still into just killing people in the name of the state. Vengeance is mine, saith the Kleti Collective. And one of the problems with ongoing capital punishment is the fact that we keep sort of examining and re-examining the meaning of that constitutional language about cruel and unusual punishment. Remember, to be unconstitutional, a punishment must be both cruel and unusual. If it's cruel, it's fine, if it's usual. If it's unusual but not cruel, that's cool too. But if it's cruel and unusual, it's got to go. Well, because it has become extremely difficult for state governments that want to kill people in the name of the state to find an acceptable method of ending a person's life, and because we have found out through the lead examples of states like Oklahomistan that so-called lethal injection isn't any less cruel or less unusual than, say, strapping somebody to a chair that's got a lot of electricity running through it, or gassing them, or shooting them, or hanging them. Well, it's hard to get the medication now. It's not medication. The poison. It's hard to get the poison from a pharmaceutical company now with which to perform the horizontal crucifixions. Or it was hard. Now it's not so hard. There, because of lawsuits, in particular by some death row inmates in Mississippi Stan, and the subpoenas that can go out under those suits, well, they subpoenaed the Missouri Department of Corrections, wanting to know who supplied the drugs that they used to kill people in the name of the state, and what the drugs were. The Attorney General of Missouri, Stan, has been trying to suppress this, as a quash the subpoena, but he hasn't had any luck so far. Meanwhile, the company that provides the poison has responded anonymously to the lawsuit. This is just nuts. They got a pseudonym. They're called M7. M7. And they are a supplier of poison used in lethal injection. And M7, in a motion filed a week ago, has now declared that the reason that it sells deadly poison for use in killing people in the name of the state, the reason that it does this is because it considers the sale of the poison to be political speech. That's right. Selling poison for killing people in the name of the state is deemed by this company to be a matter of its First Amendment freedom of expression because, well, you know why, don't you? Yeah? Right? Sure.
Corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
And this corporate human being likes to kill people in the name of the state. In the affidavit provided by M7, some pettifogging lawyer wrote, "The decision to provide lethal chemicals to the department was based on M7's political views on the death penalty and not based on economic reasons." The fact that M7's expression of political views involves a commercial transaction does not diminish M7's First Amendment rights. Engaging in profit-based commerce, trafficking in chemicals used to deliberately kill people in the name of the state, is, according to those same pettifogging lawyers, an expression of political views no different than signing a referendum petition or selling a T-shirt.
Except the referendum petition or the T-shirt won't kill your ass.
And they won't be used disproportionately to kill people of color who wind up on death row far more than good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual white folks. See how that works? And this is, of course, because of Citizens United. This is the natural, extension into the realm of absurdity, which the Supreme Court opened with that decision. Can you imagine making that argument? None of us could make that argument. Could we?
Well, maybe a gun store owner could. Well, this ain't got nothing to do with the Second Amendment. This is about my First Amendment right. And my First Amendment, it's political speech for me to sell a gun to anybody who can come in here and give me the money and go away with the gun and maybe take it up somewhere and and open the yawning, gaping maw of hell for some innocent human being. That's just my First Amendment rights.
You kind of wonder, don't you? Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, M7 Pharmaceuticals, proudly headed up by Martin Shkreli. Oh, yeah, nice point. Sister Carol Baker pointing out, if it was political speech, they'd provide the drugs for free, not for a fat profit. You got it, but you gotta have profit. If it ain't profitable, it ain't merkin. It ain't patriotic. So, at issue in this matter is whether the discovery process can be used to find out the names of lethal chemical suppliers so that anti-death penalty activists may harass and boycott those suppliers in an effort to coerce them into not supplying lethal chemicals. So, in other words, M7 gets to remain a secret, but profit by it because they like killing people according to their political beliefs. But nobody who opposes the death penalty has a right to express themselves. You know, it's, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But it strikes me that we are eventually going to extend the First Amendment so far that it becomes odious, that it becomes hateful. The First Amendment protects the religion industry. It protects the Donald Trumps of the world. It allows people, the way it's interpreted, allows people to call for other people to be killed. Yeah, let's take away her Secret Service protection, and then we'll see what happens to her. First Amendment, baby. So there's that. Just worth thinking about, maybe. What else? Lots else. Speaking of working on killing people, are you familiar with an island called Pagan? Probably not. I wasn't.
It's just a 10-mile-long little bit of nothing in the Western Pacific Ocean. It is beautiful. The whole region is gorgeous. 1,600 miles from the Philippines, Pagan. 300 people at one point had to flee there because of a volcanic eruption. They'd like to go home again. They're probably not going to get to. Because the Pentagon wants to bomb the snot out of Pagan. It's part of the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands. People seeking to live there, to return home, have joined in a lawsuit to try to stop this plan from going forward. Pagan and Tinian are slated to become places to practice dropping bombs on people. You know, no people there, so we'll just practice dropping bombs. A simulated war zone. And troops from the U.S., Japan, South Korea, and Australia will play war games there in order to try to sort of, you know, let the inscrutable Chinese know that, you know, we're watching. What a pity. I mean, is it really necessary just to ruin little chunks of paradise because we can? Until it was depopulated, it had a human presence on it for about 1,300 years. That was population by the Chamorro people. But when you turn the archaeologists loose, you find out that people have been on Pagan for about 2,000 years. The Spanish tried to deport them in the 1600s. The Germans occupied. The Japanese occupied. And, yeah, now the United States wants to just bomb the hell out of it and shoot at it and land Marines on it and so forth. Bless their hearts, the lawyers heading up the lawsuit are from one of the if not the finest green organizations out there, Earth Justice. I know some of those folks, and there is no one more caring, no one more committed, and they got no problem taking on something like this. David Henkin at Earth Justice is leading the litigation. He says, the lawsuit's aim is to force the U.S. Navy to be honest about what it needs to do as distinguished from what it merely wants to do. The Navy needs to make its reasoning known to the American public. We live in a democracy, and if the... sure we do. And if the Navy wants to make Pagan uninhabitable and turn Tinian into a living hell for its residents, then it has to explain why before it starts moving thousands of Marines to Guam. We're not saying that the Marines shouldn't fulfill their national security mission. It's the why and where that we're concerned about. I will try to keep up with that story, and I'll cross my fingers for David Henkin and the team at Earth Justice. So we've got that. And, hey, I think I'm trying to avoid talking about the presidential election. I know I'm supposed to. I guess it's my job. But I don't want to. We are 1 month and 8 days away from the election. People have started absentee voting, early voting. And it'll all be over, but the weeping, depending on how things turn out, in a little over a month's time. And you just kind of got to ask, what's left? How about some good news? We had a victory today. A win. Something for the W column. Yay! Judge Roy Moore in Alabama is no more a judge in Alabama. The Court of the Judiciary ruled in the matter of Roy Moore's flagrant, blatant attempt to circumvent the law of the land as regarding same-sex marriage. And they didn't throw him off the bench like they did before. Over the great big giant goddamn Ten Commandments monument. They just suspended him this time. But they suspended him for the remainder of his term. Which means, and because of his age, he will not be able to run for the judgeship again when his term ends. Everyone down in Alabama pretty much expects him to run for governor, naturally on the Republican ticket. You might recall that after the Obergefell decision by the Supreme Court, Judge Roy Moore issued an order from the Supreme Court bench of Alabama instructing judges of probate in all of Alabama's 67 counties to ignore the ruling until he said so. This led to charges filed against Moore. And he has railed against gay marriage and against the charges against him. Among other things, he says that he is being persecuted by a professional drag queen. He's being persecuted for his faith in God. The person in question is a trans person. She calls herself Ambrosia Starling. Said she wasn't comfortable being the face of the challenge, but it had to be done. And so, consequently, she was going to do it. At his trial, Moore, at a hearing, Moore was completely unhinged. Oh, I'm sorry, not a professional. No, a professed transvestite. Moore said, in 2013, if this would have happened then, this person and the people around her, or some of the people around her, him, would have been said to have a mental disorder. Of For her part, Ambrosia Starling merely said, "He must go. Alabama deserves better than this. The rule of law deserves better than this." And he's gone. And isn't that just wonderful? But he'll be back. Because, well, because evil. The weirdo right-wing amosexual gundamentalists, of course, were well represented in protests and so forth. A guy by the name of Alan Hoyle, who calls himself an evangelist and has one of those beards that looks like the painting of John Brown that was on the cover of one of the Kansas albums. He said, "I feel sorry for these people. Their lifestyle is a perversion, and the state should stay out of marriage law." As Carol Baker, who just took us down to $171 to go, in the name of connectivity, she notes, as Carol notes, "Dear Judge Roy Moore, bye, Felicia." Oh, yeah. Richard Cohen is president of the Southern Poverty Law Center. He said, "Moore's convicted himself with his own words, so his defense was just word games." But here's why this stayed on my radar. The argument put forward was that, I mean, this was where they hung their hopeless little hat. When Judge Roy Moore issued the order telling probate judges not to issue marriage licenses to gay couples, well, the argument they put forward in this hearing was, well, it's called an order. This is a quote, by the way. It's called an order, but it can't force anyone to do anything. Now, we've got more than a couple of lawyers in the Horn Family Community Congregation, almost all of whom, if they are listening right now, are chuckling merrily away. A court speaks only through its orders. If a court does not issue a written order, it ain't nothing. It's called an order, but it can't force anyone to do anything. This argument was put forward, and this is why the little lights went off for me, by one Matt Staver. Remember? Ring a bell? The lawyer for sister clerk Kim Davis? The guy who runs the grift known as Liberty Council? And it's all tax-free. Yeah. The Court of Judicial Inquiry, the Court of the Judiciary found that the clear purpose of Moore's January order to the state's 68 probate judges to refuse to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples was, quote, to order and direct the probate judges, most of whom had never been admitted to practice law in Alabama, to stop complying with binding federal law. For his part, Roy Moore said, "This was a politically motivated effort by radical homosexual and transgender groups to remove me as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court because of outspoken opposition to their immoral agenda." So a judge can only speak through his orders and is compelled to abide by the laws of the state and the nation, the supreme law of which is the Constitution of the United States. But he still figures out, he still figures that that covers him, that, that he's allowed to decide which way that people love each other is moral and which way that people love each other is immoral. Wonder how, wonder what stance he, I wonder where he'd come down on, say, the three marriages and who knows, maybe yet four of Donald J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane. Is that immoral? Nah, I didn't think so. Two people who have been together for decades, however, and would like to solemnize it through the through recognition by a state which does not is not supposed to endorse any particular religions or any religion at all. Yeah, that's immoral. That's immoral, according to Judge Roy Moore. Now, Matt Staver, who runs the Liberty Council grift, he says he'll appeal. He did that back in 2003 and lost then, too. Richard Cohen went on and said, the bottom line of this ruling is he can't exercise any judicial authority or power. Yeah, me too, Carol. Carol Baker notes, I'll miss those lectures on family values from Donald, Rudy, and Newt, who together have enough wives and ex-wives to form a baseball team. Yeah, with a complete pitching staff and relievers and a bullpen and a lot of wives there. But they were, they're moral, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing. But that Hillary, oh, the devil, you know, because she's been married once, and she stood married, even when Bill got caught, you know, with the cigar and the right. Cost us $80 million to learn all about that. Thank you, Ken Starr. Thank you. No, really, you've done enough. So we've got that going for us. What else? Can we take a minute here for some... Well, here, let me check the mail real quick. Steve writes and says, your job? Bet, Bob. I'd rather talk about the lint between my toes than the presidential election. Frankly, what's there to talk about? You know, just the outrage du jour. The latest stupid, mean, nasty, rotten thing that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has said or done. That's some good ciphering, Carol. Trump, three wives. Newt, three wives. Rudy, three wives. Rush, three wives. But Hillary Clinton is a bad person for having one husband. Well, there you go. Yeah, like yeah, that's a baseball team and a pitching staff. Of course, let's remember Rush's three wives are kept in a pit. Yeah. Yeah, Steve, who is in fact a lawyer, said, "I can just imagine it, Judge. You have issued a temporary restraint just." Judge, just because you've issued a temporary restraining order doesn't mean my client has to stop doing what you said. It's only a suggestion, see? Yeah, good for thee and not for me. Right. So there's that. In the last week or so, I don't know if you caught it or not, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals heard a case, and I'm not—it's not—it's not deliberately law Friday on the front porch. These just happen to have kind of piled up along the way. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals heard a little case, a little dust-up, that goes by the name of West Virginia. Yeah, really. Our shame. West Virginia versus the Environmental Protection Agency. They heard the case, and it was brought by a whole bunch of Republican attorneys general for the purpose of trying to strike down President Obama's clean power plan. Yeah. Oh, standby. Sorry. Sorry for the dead air. That was Ferg. I had to take that. But anyway, they heard the story. They heard the case. And it was apparently almost as bizarre as Matt Staver arguing that, well, you know, it says it's an order, but, you know, it's not really an order. Nobody has to do anything he says. Yeah, that's an astonishing level of stupid. But there it was. The Clean Power Plan could save tens of thousands of people from premature death. But, it kind of remains to be seen as to whether or not that the law will survive. But it was a bizarre hearing. It was coal companies and attorneys general, in particular West Virginia's nasty, nasty Attorney General Patrick Morrissey. He who is also bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. He's got buckets of money brought to him by, opioid manufacturers and whatnot. West Virginia versus United States Environmental Protection Agency. I am so ashamed. It went past 6 hours of oral argument before the court. Now, at present, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has what could probably be counted as a majority of Democrats, or so-called, well, not, you know, not teabagging type, yeah. The Republicans, the attorneys general, the coal companies, all argued that the EPA does not have the power to determine the best way to reduce emissions in the air. That they can only tell a power plant how to operate, not whether it can operate at all. It got so bad that Judge Nina Pillard looked at one of the coal company attorney general lawyers and said, "You got anything stronger?" By way of argument, anything? Got really? This is the hill you're going to fight and die on? Really? Yeah. Okay. Judge Kavanaugh, a right-wing judge on the bench, said, "This is a huge case. Even the Pope's involved." No, really, they brought up Pope Francis and it, yeah. Maybe just kind of keep an eye out for follow-ups on that. I don't know when the ruling will issue, but here's the thing. It will go to the Supreme Court of the United States, where we still have a 4-4 tie, unless that Kennedy kid comes over to the side of the Angels. And I heard something. I wanted to mention this along the way. Oh, wait. you're right. Maybe I'm just a bubble off plum. Carol pointed out. Wait, I thought we already determined that killing people is freedom of speech. We did. Of course, that assertion by M7 has not been... No, it has not been ruled upon. Ruled on. It could be bounced out on its ear. Engaging in commerce as freedom... Oh, dear God. So there's that, you know, the Clean Power Plan. Now, consider that in conjunction with this. If you are Latino, Hispanic, you are 51% more likely than other ethnicities in this country to live in a county that has toxic levels of ozone and other particulate poisons. Latino children every year have about 153,000 asthma attacks. They have 112,000 lost school days. Latino people generally are 17% of the U.S. population, but they're 20% of the population in counties with elevated cancer risks that come from oil and gas emissions. What? No coal? They're more likely to be poor and uninsured. They're more likely to be poisoned from gas wells, gas refineries, storage tanks. They breathe in and take in through their skin benzene, hydrogen sulfide, formaldehyde. You know, the Clean Power Plan really has a purpose and a point. But just ask any Republican, it's just part of that one's war on coal. Right? Sure.
This is data that came out from an organization called the National Hispanic Medical Association. And there's never been an effort before to document health risks faced particularly and specifically by the Hispanic population. Hydrogen sulfide causes severe respiratory irritation, death, formaldehyde, cancer-causing. Oh, and formaldehyde? Oil and gas sources produce about 22,000 tons of formaldehyde, or at least they did in 2011. Meanwhile, there's a little organization called the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. They recently issued a finding. Interestingly enough, it says that the EPA is failing in terms of any sort of mission toward environmental justice for poor communities of color. Among other things, the National Hispanic Medical Association report points to 1.78 million, more than that, really, Latinos who breathe poisonous air every day and whose associated cancer risk is above that level that the EPA refers to as a level of concern. Of concern, yeah. 4 out of 10 metropolitan areas where Latino children and adults are most likely to be poisoned. 4 of them are in Texas: Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, and Austin. Even Austin, yeah. You're also, if you are a Latino, you are at risk in Los Angeles, in Denver, in Albuquerque. Get this, in Kansas and Ohio, more than 1 in 3 and 1 in 5 Latinos in each state live within a half-mile radius of a facility related to the oil industry. That's a lot of poison. The EPA is trying to do something. Job killing, that's what they're doing. Jesus. They're finalizing rules for methane, smog-forming, volatile organic compounds. Those are just called VOX, volatile organic compounds. Benzene, and some other poisons. But, the rule's not done yet. There will be a lawsuit over it when it is done. And 75% of the oil and gas infrastructure in this country gets grandfathered in, so they get to keep poisoning. Now, at the risk of being perceived as telling someone how to vote, stop telling people how to vote, Bob! One of the two candidates who will win the election is at least supportive of the mission of the Environmental Protection Agency. The other one has said he would like to dismantle it, to destroy it. Not that I'm telling anybody how to vote or anything. Because, you know, I'm not. Heck no. Shucks no. Golly gee. No way. So, here we are at the top of the hour. We still have $171 to raise to finish the month and beat the Swede. Hopefully that'll happen in the coming couple of hours. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable.
And a reminder, the best way to participate in that is through Skype. But if you absolutely cannot, we have one phone line for you so that you can join in that way. It is, of course, the stress line. Area code 304-663-4676. Area code 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. So let's take a break and get it going. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Ventura Highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know.
Days are stronger, the nights are longer than moonshine. Or was it the other way around? Oh, well. Friday on the Front Porch begins now on the Horn. Let's check in right this very instant with Sparky and see what's happening. Hey, Sparky. Love it. I'm loving the cow cam.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing pretty good. It looks like a lovely day.
The cattle are kind of far away, but they, you know, they might move towards the pitcher, and then you, and
I see. I heard what you did there. Move toward the picture. Yeah.
From time to time, you may see a black dog run through the pitcher frame. my stepson and his wife are here at a surprise birthday party.
Oh, yay.
For my wife.
Happy birthday.
It's Judy's wife. My birthday's on the 19th, the date of the last debate.
Oh, well, what a present that will be for you. I've come up with an idea, by the way, mentioning the debate. I think the last debate should be, the format should be changed. I want it to be a head-to-head Jeopardy match.
With the board.
Yeah, you're kind of going robot on me there, Sparky.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. With the Jeopardy board and everything, like.
Oh yeah, and Alex Trebek moderating, absolutely. Yeah, I think
wouldn't be hard to play stump the Donald.
Well, I don't think he'd score a single point because there are rules to the game, and he wouldn't answer any of the clues in the form of a question.
No, he wouldn't.
You're a loser. Oh, sorry, Donald.
He had all the hair on the back of my neck stand up at one point in that debate when he mentioned B-52s, of course.
Oh, yeah, our crappy, crummy, miserable, shitty B-52s?
Yeah.
Because that's basically what he said, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the B-52s flying now are the BH models, and the only thing left is the original plane. Is the airframe, not the innards. The innards evolve and change, believe me. They got new sensors and stuff on the side of them, on the side of the big nose. There's a new sensor on the side of each one to do something. All the electronics is new. The engines are new. They aren't my B-52s.
No. I guess what, the airframe is pretty much all that's left? Most of that's probably been replaced, too.
Yeah, I'm sure it has, because there's certain parts of it, like the wings and stuff, don't have a certain life, too, to them. And they have to be totally rebuilt. But it's amazing what they can do in a fab shop, though.
But we don't have anything that he likes. We're all losers, and we all suck. Right?
And we, you're a sucker if you pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got my IRS thing straightened out. Remember, I said they sent me a letter, but it didn't explain what they wanted. Well, I got another letter that said, well, you paid too much taxes. So they sent me a refund check. So well, I definitely paid more taxes than Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, everything is more than zero. That might even be a mathematical concept. Everything is more than zero. Well, so we've got we do have a good little group forming. Hopefully, maybe you know, more folks will wander in. But hey, Steve, I see. I always get a smile from your early Kyler avatar.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me? Am I coming through?
You're just dandy.
All right, fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Hi. You know, I think I'm a little tired. Fighting with corporate America just kind of saps your strength.
And this election is just wearing me out. Can this thing just be over soon enough?
Well, careful what you ask for, because you may come to regret it. I mean,
I understand what you're saying, and in fact, I watch a show on Showtime called The Circus. And they are predicting that it's going to be a repeat of the 2000 Florida election, and that just scares the hell out of me.
Oh, Christ, please, no.
Everything's going to come down to Florida, you know, and there's a reason why it's shaped like a big penis, you know.
Yeah, but this time you don't have Jeb Bush to fix it.
Well,
or presumably you don't. I guess he's still not a team player.
Well, let's just hope it doesn't come that close. I mean, good gosh. I mean, George Bush didn't really scare me. Well, he did. Mitt Romney didn't really scare me, but this guy scares the shit out of me, Bob.
You know, I don't think anybody thought. You know, George liked to start his little wars here and there, and you know, murder a million people. But you didn't really think that dim leader was capable of pressing the button, and you damn sure didn't think Romney was.
No.
This guy is.
Yeah. And it's even more frightening that Romney tried to warn us about this guy being a charlatan. I mean, when you got the devil calling out another devil, you need to pay attention, you know?
But you know, that's the thing, though, Steve. We didn't need warned. The Republicans did. And the louder that Romney warned, the more determined these political babies became to foist the risk of Donald Trump on the rest of us.
I'll just be glad when it's all over, and hopefully, you know, and people are going to throw off of me for saying this, and I don't care. I'm at the point where I just don't care anymore. Hopefully Hillary will take this thing, because it's a binary choice. What other choice do we have?
None.
And I'm not telling anybody how to vote before I start getting...
Stop telling people how to vote, Steve!
Well, you and I were kind of in the same boat there, Bob, because I get a lot of hate, you know, and I'm not trying to tell anybody how to do anything. In fact, I'll quote the great Mike Malloy, if you're going to vote because the reason I vote for somebody, then you need to get a fucking life, man.
Yeah, I heard Mike the night that he went all Shatner on yeah. That's called going full Shatner, get a life part.
Yeah, seriously, but I got to do what's best for me. I don't have children, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews, and I have to look out for them in their future.
I understand it. I mean, you get no argument from me on that. And, I mean, you say, you sounded sort of resigned when you said, listen, I just hope she wins. I do, too. Because to not hope she wins is to hope he wins. And to hope he wins is to, I don't know, screw ourselves with a barbed wire dildo.
And that sounds very painful. And there are no other alternatives, unfortunately, because the way this thing is set up, due to Citizens United, it's a binary choice. And that's the reality of the situation that we're facing.
I want to share some language with you guys. These are just some descriptions. Half insane rascal. Pathetic dunderhead. Nowhere fool. Big mouth. Okay? Mysterious, calamitous figure. There's more. An egomaniac who loves only himself. A narcissist with a taste for self-dramatization. Characteristic fondness for superlatives. Questionable capacity for self-control. A keen eye for the strengths and weaknesses of other people. An ability to instantaneously analyze and exploit situations. Bottomless mendacity. So thoroughly untruthful that he can no longer recognize the difference between lies and truth. A swamp of lies, distortions, innuendos, half-truths, and real facts.
remind you of anybody?
Are the initials AH?
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, they are. Because it comes from a review in the New York Times of a new book called Hitler Ascent, 1889 to 1939, by Volker Ulrich. But you can take every one of those phrases, and it's Donald Trump.
It's as relevant then as it is now, and I don't know if we can survive this guy. I just don't, and that's why it just scares the hell out of me. And it's fun just to be over. I want to wake up from this nightmare.
Well, he's a clear and present danger to world peace, just like Hitler was, you know?
Yeah, only now with more devastating weapons.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Did anybody see Keith Overman's latest video?
I saw the 17-minute catalog of lies. I haven't seen the latest one, though, I don't think.
He talks about the bookies and how the line is going after the debate. People that bet real money, it's still all on Hillary. And it went up from like 63% to about 66% after the debate. People that think she's going to win.
Well, we all know that I look at 538 every day. 67.5 to 32.5% chance. Mm-hmm.
But the point of his thing is people who's got real skin in the game, that's the way they're going.
But you know what? We people have taken a bath on that kind of stuff before. Mm-hmm. I remember a certain Super Bowl. Now, who was that? The Rams? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When they won.
Right. And all the way up to...
My boss's wife won $1,500 in Reno.
Yeah, and all the way up to kickoff, the bookies were trying to get the money right. They couldn't. Mm-hmm.
Went over there and bet the Rams before the season even started.
Oh, wow.
I forget what they were. But she didn't put a whole bunch of money off it, but $1,500, I mean, she put a $10, $20 bet, something like that.
Nice return. But it is frightening, and there's no getting around it, and there's nothing wrong with admitting it. Michael Moore had a thing the other day. Again, screaming, he's going to win, he's going to win. If nothing else, trying to get people who oppose Trump to not take anything at face value and not underestimate him. Let's check in over on the stress line. I think we've got Jim joining us this evening. Is that you, Jim?
Yes, sir.
Welcome aboard. Hey Jim, if that's your speakers on, would you turn them down, please?
Sir.
What?
Okay,
thanks. Can you hear me?
That's been done.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Can you hear me?
Just a second, Bob. I'm having trouble with some equipment here.
That's been done. Okay. Okay, thanks.
Sounds like he's got something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, still getting an echo here, too. But I'd like to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, we all would.
Jim, do you want to try back?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Well, welcome.
Jim, do you want to try back? I'm right here. Oh, okay. Well,
apparently there's some
sort.
Yeah, apparently there's some sort of technical difficulty on your end. Well, hopefully Jim will get that sorted out. Now I got a creepy feeling I'm going to wind up reading this book. I don't want to, but it might be instructive. Hey, Charlie, I just saw you pop in. Okay, there went Charlie again. How about checking in with Snork? You there, Snork?
I'm here.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Looking over, how the individual states are going, and you know, it's an electoral system, so we got which state it's in matters more than just what the overall poll is.
Absolutely.
And the some of the states are awfully close, and the polls I think this year are more inaccurate than they have been because of the lack of the 18 to 30 year olds in almost all of the polls. But California is very strong for Hillary, you know, and offset by a few states like Nebraska that are very strong for Trump. But all the rest of them are just so down the line, and all of them have a percentage in the either independent or undecided that's larger than what the margin of error is. So I don't think we're going to be sleeping well that night of the election again.
And it's kind of odd to me that Iowa is a swing state when there's only six electoral votes in play.
Yeah. Well, basically, if Iowa is only in play if Trump does not win Pennsylvania.
Does not win.
Yeah. Pennsylvania is so large that it would kind of overlap a whole bunch.
But, well, Pennsylvania is 20 electoral votes, and according to 538, the odds are about 81% to 18% in Clinton's favor there.
Yeah,
but I don't think any of that can be taken for granted.
No, no. In fact, I think that, like I said before, the lack of the people under 30 being polled really makes me unsure of those numbers. And the gist I get up here in northern Iowa, the people around here, this was a manufacturing center of for tractors and for batteries for cars. And anything that hurts the car industry kind of hurts the tractor industry as well. And both of them are very upset at the jobs that have been cut back over the years due to NAFTA. And nobody trusts Hillary on the NAFTA issue or the TPP issue.
And that's a huge problem. And It's one of those. It's become one of those buzzword things, like saying ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to say is NAFTA, and and people start grumbling.
Yeah.
Without necessarily I'm not defending NAFTA, and I'm damn sure not defending the TPP, but I understand the motivations behind both of them. I can understand how a centrist member of the wealth class would think that was a nifty, groovy, keen, neato idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always got the feeling that the wealth class feels that the government's job is to provide them customers.
Yeah, otherwise known as schmucks.
Yeah. Most of the largest companies get their money exclusively from Pentagon sales. So, or not even exclusively, I guess, but a majority-wise. None of the large aircraft that we have would be sold if the government wasn't also buying them for their purposes. It's just the when the 747 was designed, and we really haven't had any major replacements for the 747 yet, 25% of the engineers were paid for by the Pentagon as reserve to be on hand just to handle emergencies in case we had another war. And so they had all that excess engineering force to design the planes. John Deere had the same thing for tractors. All the engineers were cross-trained where they could also work with tanks. Caterpillar, and all these other industries, all of the major players, Rockwell Goss, Rockwell, other industries, all of them, 25% of their engineers were an outright subsidy from the government. And that all ended about 1984.
Part of that giant...
In fact, there's still so many engineers unemployed that it's always shocks me that they say we have a shortage of STEM. What we have is a shortage of jobs for the STEM people. If you want the new people to go in, they have to see that there's jobs there that are going to be there when they get out of school. It really sucks to have an engineering degree and end up driving a bus.
Yeah. Not that there's any lack of nobility in bus driving, but it's not. It sucks to not do what you are trained to do.
Mm-hmm. Or paid to be trained to do.
Yeah. It's nerve-wracking.
So it's very nerve-wracking every day not be able to tell. And when you start looking, you know, you look at 538, the numbers aren't really that comfortably far apart.
No, they're not.
No, they're scary.
And 538 was off by quite a bit in the last election, weren't they?
You mean 14?
I was thinking 12.
Yeah, I thought Nate Silver Nate Silver was. I mean, the reason they are he is who he is because he kind of nailed it.
I thought it was he nailed 2008.
I think he got every. It's Rick here. I think he got every state right in the 2012 election and maybe even 2008 as well.
880 he was dead on.
Hey, yeah. Rick.
Hey, how's it going, Steve?
Doing good, brother. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm definitely buoyed by the ongoing meltdown of the Trumpus Snortus Rex. he just can't leave the common folk alone. He has to it's either the Gold Star families or it's, you know, the beauty pageant contestants. And you know, first he started to fat shame her, and now he's starting to try to slut shame her by talking about the alleged sex tape and what have you. But, you know, the guy just doesn't know when to leave well enough alone. I mean, he would make a horrible defense attorney. You know, he would ask, like, the one question too many that he doesn't know the answer to and result in his client going to the gallows as a result, you know?
Exactly. Well, may I put on my tinfoil hat here for just a minute?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I think we all need to adjust them and, you know, get the controls to the frequency of the sun or what?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, they're saying that Georgia may be a purple state. I find that hard to believe. However, I don't think they're taking any chances. When I say they, I don't know who I'm referring to because I got my polling card today. It used to be I could walk to my voting place, and now it's over 12 miles away.
Oh, geez, really?
Yes.
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah.
What do you got? You got some damn crazy notion you're supposed to vote, Steve?
And yeah. I called them today, and they said, "Well, the reason is because your latest polling venue was not up to speed with the wheelchairs and the handicap and all that, but it never made any difference out here in, you know, the North Georgia mountains before."
Oh, so it's an ADA issue as opposed to GOP vote suppression, huh?
Yeah, well, I think so.
Yeah, I believe that like I'd believe the guy who's trying to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, that this whole thing just smells like yesterday's laundry, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think your state, I think it's highly unlikely that it's going to go to Hillary.
No, it won't. It won't. But, there's some out in the periphery saying Georgia's a new purple state. I don't believe it. I've never believed it. But I don't think they're taking any chances, you know.
Yeah,
that's
well,
my point.
You know, you have a Republican governor, right? And you probably have a Republican secretary of state, right?
Of course. Yeah.
You know, I think after the debacle in Florida in 2000, I don't think anybody, minimizes the importance of having your party's secretary of state in charge of the state. And it happened in Ohio in 2004 with Ken Blackwell, you know, not having enough polling places in minority neighborhoods and so forth. So, you know, that gives you a whole lot of power. I mean, at least every 4 years, if nothing else, you know.
My old polling place, I could go walk in, vote, walk out. I'm sure I'm going to have a 2 or 3 hour wait at this new one. I'll let you know.
Do you guys have absentee ballots or not?
Well, of course we do. But do you trust those, or is it like writing your vote on a cocktail napkin, you know?
No, I think those are generally okay. I mean, Oregon exclusively uses vote by mail. And I think California now, I think all Californians are going to vote by mail this election is my guess. I mean, last time it was, I think, a third. I'm going to vote in person just because I enjoy the experience. But
yeah,
I wouldn't
well, me too.
12 miles to do it.
But we have well, all a lot this... of. Well, go ahead, Duncan.
A lot of places in California now are polling places making you go vote by mail.
And maybe they should.
Too much hassle to man them. So they have drop boxes. Like certain parts of our county, they're drop boxes where you can drop off your ballot, like at the little local store or whatever. They're so rural. They don't want to put a polling place out there.
Let me float this out there, because there's a lot of people that are listening a hell of a lot smarter than me. I mean, we pay our bills online. We get a confirmation number. You like to think it's secure. Why can't we vote online? I mean, shit, that would just...
Oh, silly.
I know, Bob, you're going to shoot me down for
no,
that.
I'm not going to shoot you down.
You
it's
can
just...
register to vote online here in California.
Yeah.
I would rather go the other way. I would rather take it completely offline.
Yeah, no, paper
like
and pencil.
See, go back to the...
The old paper scratch, like the old school test where you just pencil in the box?
Yeah, I think that it should be handled in multiple steps, and each of those steps, the counting should be done in public. Even if it takes 3 or 4 days, the necessity to have it in hours when the president doesn't have to take office until January is ridiculous.
But the thing is, it won't take 3 or 4 days, Snork.
No, Canada does it in an hour. but I'm saying that I think that we should expand it over days just to give it more transparency, that when the vote is counted, it should be counted in public at the local level, and the local people should have a feeling, yes or no, yeah, that's what we voted. And then it should go to the state, and the state should have the state level of what they voted. And from there, and each of the step along the way, they should have to be holding up a sign where they're counting the vote. You have flip cards. Make it as analog as possible. Every time they get a vote, they flip the card so that everybody that's watching it on TV or whatever can see that card being flipped. And that's the level of honesty that we need to ensure. And because we not only need honesty, we need the absolute understanding and appearance of honesty.
And this is coming from an engineer. I appreciate what you're having to say. I really do. But what I don't understand is, I go get gas, I get a receipt. I go to the ATM, I get a receipt. I go to vote, I get nothing. How do I know my vote's just not going into a black hole somewhere?
You don't.
Flipped.
And my fear is right now that there are two basic factions of the government. one that's supporting the Democrats and one that's supporting the Republicans, and they're flipping all the votes, having a flipping war, and I don't even know if our actual votes are being counted or if it's just a conspiracy theory.
They're just making us feel good by letting us go through the motions and stand in line and all that. How do we know? We don't.
That was it 2012 that Rove was so surprised when the votes didn't go the way he thought he was guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. He was on Fox News and he had a temper tantrum. He stormed out. Does anybody remember that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Is that Karl Rove?
Yes.
Yeah, there was talk.
I remember that.
Yeah, there was talk before that election that the Republicans had this really sophisticated computer program that would allow them to, like, steal, you know, a state or two. And there was even a name for the program. It was like a supposed get out the vote program. And I suspect that, you know, it probably did exist, and it was probably combated by someone like folks like in Anonymous or something like that, because that would explain why Rove was so surprised once the vote went south in Ohio.
Well, I can give an example that's really good. I didn't change any votes. But my son didn't register on time, and in order to vote, he had to go register and vote at the county office for our county in Illinois. They had at the county office, they had master counters, so you could go there, vote, and then you put your vote into the machine, and there was one machine for every precinct. There as a master, and just in case somebody like this came in and voted. However, if somebody had the opportunity and the knowledge of how to change the kernel on a machine with a thumb drive, they could have just walked over, changed out the program, and inserted a program to change how the votes were counted that would erase itself and make it look like their program when it's done. And they left us alone in that room for 26 minutes with all these machines. So we had full access to the machines while they went to lunch.
Well, I know that there have been some experiments done with regard to, you know, how easy it is to hack the vote. And I think pretty much without fail, just about every computer programmer who tried to hack a vote just as a exercise, not like as part of a real deal, was able to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's just too much technology out there to hack it. People mm-hmm. do break into ATMs right now. People do break into online stuff. So it's not infeasible to hack it. And I don't think that the presidential race is that trivial that we shouldn't give it the protection level of something else. You know, if you're designing an aircraft right now and it's going to be classified, you cannot have internet in the room with that design computer.
Interesting.
No internet. You can't bring a cell phone in with you. You can't bring anything. You can't take your work home with you. You can't put it on a laptop and bring it out. If it's that's how secure they feel they have to stay away from the internet with aircraft and special equipment designs. So you're not going to ever satisfy the level for me unless it's out in public. And the one problem with our system where we have the secret ballot is you never can tell if they're actually giving you the right votes. And I almost sometimes think that we need to get away from the secret ballot. We want to randomize the appearance of what our vote was. But we can still do that with a number signed to each ballot that gives you a way that you could go back online, to view, not to vote, but it's okay to view it online. But you should be able to look and say, okay, the number that they reported to the city is what I voted. The number that the city reported to the state is what I voted. And the number that I voted that the state told the country is what I voted. You should be able to check at those three levels and say, yeah, they recorded my vote correctly.
Yeah, but God, the only problem, and I'm not just trying to throw rocks or anything, Snork. Mm-hmm. But in you know, really, really seriously hardcore red-ass states.
Oh, I'm certain that people would say, you want to come to church on Sunday? Bring your vote receipt. We're going to see who you voted for.
Well, somebody like Steve or somebody like me, or, you know, a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Talabama or Mississippi Stan or God knows Jim down in Louisiana Stan, get burned out, tires slashed, gas tank sugared. The risks are real.
And that's just sad. I don't see a way to shield the person if their vote can be found out. I'm saying I'd like to have a receipt, but I don't see a way of doing it that meets with human nature.
And
hey,
let's do remember though that even in the days of good old fashioned paper ballots and pencils, those votes were fraught with fraud too.
Yeah, that's why the modern technology we need to do is monitor online, not vote online.
Meanwhile, a gentle reminder arrives from Robert in Australia. We had an entire federal election in 6 weeks. Doesn't that sound nice? Called, run, and all over in 6 weeks. Paper ballots. The Senate ballot was the size of a tea towel. Generally, the election is decided by midnight. The last election was close, so it took a day or two to decide some seats. It can be done. You just do it on a larger scale in the U.S.
And Australia has some large distances to traverse with their ballot boxes. If they can do it, I'm certain that although we might have a large area, we have a really good transportation system. And some areas of Australia can take quite a while to go through some really bad desert with a high chance of hitting a kangaroo when you're driving. So, you know, if they can do it, it really is an insult to us that we can't do it.
And sometimes the dingo eats your ballot. Sorry, couldn't resist. I'll go to hell for that, too. The list is getting kind of long. And by the way, Steve in New York says, I am actually telling people how to vote. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Bernie supporter, but you need to vote for Clinton because Johnson and Wi-Fi Jill won't, and Trump really is a fascist. But that goes hand in hand. How about a pre-Monday Moran? The Detroit News and the Chicago Tribune have endorsed Gary Johnson for president.
You're not kidding, are you?
No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I was listening to a Chicago radio station, Progressive Talk in Chicago, and they were going apoplectic about that endorsement. I wonder if the editorial board of those two newspapers have been smoking crack lately. Maybe with Gary Johnson.
Maybe Gary gave him some edibles.
There you go. It's incredible, you know, that, you know, that guy is just so not prepared for prime time. I mean, he makes Trump almost look qualified. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I guess but his would be a more benign form of disaster.
He'd be more like George W.
The two. You know, and I'm sure you know, Rick, you know, in the law where children are concerned, there are proceedings known as abuse and neglect.
Right.
Well, if you bifurcate the two, Gary Johnson is neglect.
Yeah. That's,
Donald Trump is abuse.
Yeah.
Gary Johnson would just let the children starve to death. Donald Trump would have him, you know, run over by a bus.
Yeah, right. Or shoot him in the middle of Fifth Avenue just for fun.
Exactly.
Hey, I tweeted Donald today, trying to get under his skin. Haven't heard back from him yet.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Don't hold your. You're trying to get under his vinyl.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, thanks, Charlie. Charlie just helped out with fundraising. That takes us down to 141 to go. Thanks a bunch, Charlie. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Bob, can I give a little bit of minor breaking news?
Oh, absolutely.
The New York Post is reporting that Donald Trump's microphone was actually faulty. I don't know if you guys have heard this. Regarding the first debate, there were issues regarding Donald Trump's audio that affected the sound level in the debate hall, the commission stated in a press release this evening. Almost immediately after Monday's presidential debate, Trump began whining, my word, not in the New York Post, about the quality of the microphone. And now we have it, and CNN has already released a video of him saying how it's rigged. This is further evidence is what you guys were talking about on how this guy is going to win this election and try and screw.
Yeah, but I have to push back a little bit, Thomas.
Please.
That did you have any trouble hearing him watching on the internet or watching on TV?
No, we did, as you know, we preempted you. Sorry again.
Bastard.
actually,
I'll have my day.
The correct phrase would be asshole, but I'll let you slide on that one. We had no trouble hearing him at all, except for the sniffles, and I am still utterly concerned that he was either doing Adderall or cocaine, and here's why. Not the sniffles, not anything to do with this, but what person, other than somebody who is either, and this could be, this is my own personal theory, and you know I only call you for Donald Trump stuff and other stuff.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
You're my
it's
Trump
all I
therapy.
Got. It's all I got.
You're my Trump therapy. What can I say? I think he's a dry drug addict. You know how they have dry drunks? I think he maybe could have done drugs at one point. Went cold turkey.
Oh no, he says he's never. He doesn't drink, he doesn't do drugs because of the problems that his brother had with it.
I think whatever happened to his brother scared the hell out of him and made him that way because I believe he's scared because of his brother, but I don't believe him for a minute. I think he thinks he doesn't, and it's in his own mind, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, but wait, you took me off back into the weeds again, Thomas.
Sure, I'm sorry.
The microphone. Okay, we've established no one had a problem hearing him on TV or internet or radio. Well, there was only one microphone, okay? It's not like his was bad and he was being picked up by Hillary's, okay?
No.
I don't know the make and model of that microphone. I'll bet you one of the audio geniuses out there, and we've got several who've worked in professional audio, could probably peg that pretty quickly. But they weren't lapelled. They didn't have one of those Tonight Show shotgun mics hovering over them. Okay? Still with me? The microphone was fine. Their problem was in their mix. There's only one wire. Are you with me? There's only one wire coming off that microphone. And it's going into a sound system. And the send or whatever that they had going to broadcast audio was fine. Levels were perfect. I mean, did you hear him cracking up or crackling or peaking or anything? No.
And that's the thing.
And so it is either disingenuous or a display of ignorance for the New York Post or anybody else to say that it was a problem with the microphone.
There are three other papers reporting this as of right now.
And they're all saying the microphone, right?
Yes, yes.
Then they are all three ignorant as hell.
Well, they go into the basket of Gary Johnson endorsement, as far as I'm concerned.
But do you understand why they're ignorant? I'm really, really, I really seriously want this point to get home. I mean, I don't know how you mix there at FYI, Tom. But I mean,
I do my best, but I've never had it. I've had issues with when we mixed, and usually people. I overmodulate and get yelled at for that.
But again, that is not the microphone's fault. Okay, it's how you control the microphone externally.
You're right.
Unless you've got one of those microphones that's got the controls built into it. Now, I mean, here and I know Malloy uses the same thing. A lot of people use the same microphone. It's an Electrovoice RE20. It's a dynamic mic, which means it doesn't have to have power running to it. That's got really, really high sound pressure level tolerance. In fact, it started its life, I think, as a kick drum mic. And so you can yell till hell freezes over into it, and it'll take it. Again, I don't know the make and model of the microphone that was on there, and if anybody does, tell me. But the microphone is going into a mix desk. It's going into it. It's going into one channel on a mix desk.
For all we know, Bob.
Out of that mix desk, it's going several different places. The same channel that was delivering that audio to the hall is not the same channel that was delivering audio to the TV. Because if there were problems in the hall, then there would have been problems on TV. So it's either something in the mix desk, or it's in the PA system in the speaker arrangement in the hall.
Well, that's what I was getting at, and what I was trying to get to was it was, and for all we know, there could have been a short in a wire. I just recently dealt where I had to get a new mic because my wire went to shit, and I ended up getting a new mic last minute. Because of it. So I totally understand what's going on with that. But I want to change the subject one more time, if you'll permit me.
Sure.
Bob, I don't usually do this, but we have a new show that comes on right after Mike Malloy. And I don't know how many people are interested in things like the North Dakota pipeline and what's going on with Indian country and everything else. But we have, it's not going to be on tonight, but starting Monday again, Lou Hastings, who does a co-host job with me on Some Say Now, he hosts the Red Road radio show every Monday through Friday. His daughter is getting married Saturday, so they have a rehearsal dinner, so he won't be here tonight. I really would ask your audience to check Lou's show out and our paywall-free archives of his show. He does a fabulous job, and Jules had him on Morning Jules to talk about Dakota Pipeline. He has family out there. So if you're interested in any of that on a regular or irregular basis, I strongly suggest checking out our newest and latest original program that we have, because Lou is absolutely great, and he's a great radio talent too, and does a better job than me sometimes. Okay, all the time.
you're far too humble.
No, I'm not. Don't tell that lie. Humble. Who are you? We've talked before, right?
Do I know you?
But no. The back to the Trump thing, though. This scares me, and I was listening to you guys earlier, and you folks, and our community needs to be very wary and on our feet, and start telling people who to vote for. I don't care anymore. I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
All right. Okay. So everybody, send your hate, your angry emails to Tom. Okay.
Here's my email address: doubtingtom@fynation.com. doubtingtom@fynation.com. Tell me why you want to burn it down, and explain to me what will be left in the rubble, and how your family and how your friends and how everybody else will cope when Speaker Ryan and Mike Pence the Putz gets done with us. Forget Trump. Look at those two idiots. The three stooges of government will kill us. So please, send me, I'm done being Mr. Nice Guy. It's too close to call now at this point.
Well, I agree. By the way, as to the microphone controversy, Robert in Australia says, Trump had a faulty microphone. I could hear him here in Australia. And it was all in caps. That's why I yelled. Clarence, meanwhile, says, microphone mishap. I heard every idiotic word Trump uttered. The sniffling sounded like it was in Dolby. Trump is full of shit. Well, we kind of knew that. Actually, Clarence was nicer than me. Clarence said Trump is full of it. I added the sh.
I've rubbed off on you, Bob. You're swearing. What's with all this? Have I made you swear more? Because that's my gig. I'm the one who does all the
swearing. You're a bad influence.
Oh, okay. I'm okay with that. That I'm totally okay with, as long as... And that, if I had been taught by nuns, that's what they would have told me. But I only got the lay teachers. Did I quiet the room? What is this? What happened?
You killed the conversation, Thomas. Damn you!
Yes.
Let me ask this. Okay, you go next, Rick. Just real quick, let me update. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, who has joined the conversation. By the way. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, for helping us out with fundraising. We are now down to $136 to go to knock off the week and beat the Swede.
Well, got to beat the Swede, Bob, for sure. I was going to ask, is it possible that Donald had difficulty hearing Lester Holt? I guess... maybe the amplification system was the problem rather than the microphone?
No. He possible? Has repeatedly said that people in the hall had trouble hearing him.
Oh. Well, he was fine on TV. I didn't have a problem hearing him.
Well, I presume that the candidates had IFBs. You know, the little coily things with the in the ear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they did. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, okay, so if people in the hall couldn't hear him, so what? As long as he's coming
But that even gets the lie, because remember at the beginning of the pageant when Lester Holt said, "No, we're not going to have any clapping and cheering from you fucking Trumpansies. Behave yourselves. We've all agreed on this. You can clap for the candidates now. Clap, dummies." And everybody clapped.
Right.
Well, later during the pageant, I forget what it was that Trump said, but by God, the Trumpansies started hooting and hollering and peeling bananas and flinging poo and all the things that Trumpansies do at debates. They thought it was Fox again.
Yeah, I think maybe after one of his comments about the emails or something like that, maybe that was when they stepped over the line, you know?
Well, they did it a couple of times. So my question is, if they can't hear what he's saying, how do they know when to hoot?
Well, I guess it's extrasensory hearing or something, Bob, you know? They just sense it, the vibes, you know?
I mean, I'm sorry, this is just... I hadn't planned to talk about this. I just ignored it until Thomas brought it to our attention. But
I'm sorry.
This is... this is setting my bullshit alarm just clanging like the klaxon on a sinking ship.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The only thing I noticed is before the coverage of the debate started, I was watching online on like trying to watch CNN, And it didn't start right on time because they were like adjusting the microphones and stuff like that around Lester Holt. I don't know if you all saw that, but you know, I moved over to a different network where the debate actually had started already, which is weird, you know. There was some kind of time delay on built into my computer. I don't know why that was. And they were like, you know, they were technicians for quite a while before the candidates came up to the stage, where they were monkeying with the sound and, you know, making adjustments and stuff like that. I don't know if anybody else remembers seeing that. So, but that doesn't prove anything in terms of a microphone being bad. You know, it proves they were making sure they had everything correct. Yeah, Tom?
Rick, you're exactly right. It doesn't prove a damn thing. It just, and what angers me about this is what the media and everybody does, except for us and Mike Malloy and you know, Bob. Every time he freaks out, they push back, and then they give him the field. He calls a flag on the field that isn't really there, and it's an imaginary flag on the field, to use a sporting analogy that Mr. No Sport shouldn't use. And then all of a sudden, the flag magically appears, and we have to make the play by his call.
Well, let's say that he pulls out his freak flag, and then everybody responds to it, you know? He's like a 7 or 8-year-old, you know?
Exactly, and I don't understand how anybody can allow that to be in governance. Anybody, and Bob knows this, and you guys know if you've heard me call in or listen to my show. I was on the fence for Jill Stein for a little while. I changed my mind, and I got smart, and I wised up. And you know what? I'm not a fan of Hillary. I she pisses me off left and right, but I'll be damned if I'm going into Gitmo because Donald Trump thinks I need one of those rooms. I like where I'm living.
I hear you. I hear you. Are you trying to tell us how to vote, Tom?
Totally. And again, my email. doubtingtom@fyination.com. And if you don't want to subscribe, that's fine. I only have 4 subscribers anyway. And I'm happy with those that we have. So, you know, I am so angry at this point. And I'm even more angrier at the divisiveness from progressives who I thought were so much more rational than they're behaving. And
yeah.
I will not, I'm calling them out on my show tonight. So if you want to listen to the 10 o'clock hour or the 11 o'clock hour, you'll know who they are. But the ones who went off after our friend over at FYI Nation, Jeff Waldorf, if you know anything about that, Bob, I know you do. My anger and my
yeah, that was just that was just weird.
My protective mother cubness and everything that those Trumpeteers thought I was a lesbian over. Oh, honey, the lesbian has arrived. That's all I got to say on that. I'll shut up now.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Bob and people.
Yeah. Hey, Scott.
How's Punky?
He's pretty good. I've got a question and would like to delve further into this microphone nonsense, if you want to.
No, you're an old radio hand. You've got a dog in this hunt.
Well, I'm wondering. I've only been to one actual presidential debate, and that was when the 84 debate came to Kansas City, when it was Reagan against Mondale. And I forget the venue, but the press people were down in the basement. And I was rubbing elbows with all sorts of greats, you know, from the national scene. It was pretty heady stuff, you know, for a kid like me. But that's neither here nor there. Back in those days, it was all handled by the League of Women Voters. And now under this current arrangement, there's a debate commission of sorts, supposedly bipartisan, having to do with the campaigns themselves and the overseers of the debate. Then you have the network who is distributing the audio and video for the debate. And then you have the venue at which the debate is being held, okay, who provide the stage and the forum for the proceedings that night. My question is, ultimately, whose responsibility and job is it to make sure that the audio is set up correctly in an equitable fashion for all of the candidates involved?
This stuff all gets negotiated, Scott. The venue.
No, I'm asking nuts and bolts stuff. There's not a negotiation as to who handles the technical setup.
Oh, you're talking about the physical work?
Yeah, I mean, is it the venue that's responsible? Is it the network that's responsible?
Oh no, it's the debate commission is in charge, and then the venue, I'm sure that I have no doubt that this was a union job.
Well, this is what I'm getting at. Who, in the final analysis, who does the hands-on work with the attaching of the microphones, the testing of the microphones, the balance and bass and treble and all the various settings of the microphone?
Those are audio professionals.
Probably IATSE or something like that. I think that's the name of the union.
Association
of Teamsters and Electronic or something.
Oh, it could be that. It could be IBEW. It could be CWA.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, see, in today's world, I've been so far away from it, you know, from the business and union activities for so long that I'm not sure who's in charge.
Yeah, I mean, Trump's son is apparently capable of protecting America against the cyber, but they use actual trained professionals to set this stuff up. I mean, I've seen it in a setting when Netroots Nation was in Pittsburgh many years ago.
Okay, you know, but here's my follow-up question, Mr. President. Once everything is set, then the campaigns, then the debate commission, then the network honchos, and then the venue overseers, don't they sign off on their happiness with how things are set?
I don't know that they sign off, because that's what I said, you know, before any of this happens, everything is subject to negotiation. I mean, the brand of face powder that'll be used, the campaigns, you know, the campaigns each agree. And so I would be very surprised if from the microphone to the mixer, you know, they had to approve all of it in advance so that nobody can claim an unfair advantage, which is or disadvantage, which is exactly what's happening now. And
yeah,
hey, Thomas, could you email me that article?
I can put it right in the, hold on, let me put it right in the
Bob,
thing.
No, it doesn't help me, Bob, if you put it in the chat.
Okay, I can email it to you right now.
Okay, Bob, while he's doing that, I'm not going that far back in the process.
But you have to, Scott.
No, well, listen, you don't even let me make my point before you tell me what I'm not saying, or should be saying, or what you think you've heard me say. Now here, just pause a moment and let me tell you what I'm telling you, and then you can tell me what you think. I'm sorry, I don't mean to snap at you, but, you know, here's the deal. I am comparing it, in a way, to mission control for a moon launch. You have Gene Kranz with his vest and his crew cut and his chain smoking of camels, who is the flight controller, okay, the flight director. He gives an ultimate go or no-go for steps in the mission, but that is based on what all those other people in the room at those consoles tell him he should do, the status checks of all the various systems. That's why I'm saying you don't have to go back to the negotiating part of it. The evening of the event, an hour or so before, once everything is set up, there are people who have a vested interest in the success of the event who should have a go or no-go recommendation for whoever is ultimately in charge. And that's where I'm putting the conversation and the focus right now, because depending on the veracity of that part of the process, it will determine whether anything that these people are saying, these charges that the Trumpsters are making, have any basis in reality. Given everything else the man has done since June of 2015, it's probably, more than likely, another example of this typical horseshit and non-reality reality that he engages in. All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to snap at you, man. It's your show, but it's just very frustrating when you're trying to make a valid point and you don't get to fully make it. So I'll shut up now.
Thanks, Punky. I think it was lost in the translation. We can blame Punky for that one, Scott. Bad translation.
Well, I don't know whether it's the bird or not. I'm just kind of in bad sorts right now, and I don't mean to take it out on you guys.
We know that.
Well, in answer to your question, there is a sound check. I don't care if it's a Stones concert or a presidential debate. There's a sound check. If there are electronic modifications to the words that will be spoken, there's a sound check. They had a sound check before the debate, and everything passed. Okay? The reason that I said you have to go back to the negotiation status, or to the agreements that were struck regarding what would and would not happen inside that venue, is because there is agreement there. If Trump didn't like the goddamn microphone, then that was for his team to have worked out previously. All right? They signed off. They signed off on the venue. They signed off on everything. But understand, the audio is all single source. I mean, sure, you've got front of house, and maybe they've got IFBs, you know, returns into their ears, but everything is coming from a single source, or, you know, maybe a couple of different, but that microphone wire only goes one place. And so, after the sound check, and sound check takes in everything. It's like you use the moonshot, Scott. I think about the pre-flight checklist of a pilot. You go through these things because everything has to be in place, or else nobody goes anywhere. Now, there is no way in hell that if there was a problem with any of that audio equipment, they would have gone on without trying to fix it first. They're not going to cancel the debate over a bum speaker. And they're not going to let the bum speaker go forward either. So,
well,
you can safely presume that everything checked out at sound check prior to anything going hot and live.
One of the 76 debates between Carter and then-President Ford, didn't they lose the lights or the audio or the visual for like 20-some minutes during one of the actual debates?
I don't remember that. But, I mean, sure, that? You're subject to a power outage or something like that? Yeah.
No, I mean, they lost it, but the networks didn't go away and put on reruns of, you know, My Mother the Car or something.
Right.
They basically
no video, was that it? The sound, but no video? I think I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, but it was the deal was it was for like 20 minutes or something, and everybody was joking about it. But to support Bob's notion here is, it's like you say, if there's a problem, if it's fixable, they'll attempt to fix it and then proceed from there. They're not just going to scrap it. I would be curious to know exactly what charges the Trumps are making regarding this microphone issue that they think they've had, because then you can take it, work backwards, and look at steps along the way that would automatically preclude that happening, and poke holes in their charge.
Scott,
I would be very curious to see what they're saying happened.
At the latest rally, Scott, to answer your question, I watched a clip from CNN. They're not making any specific charges. They're just doing exactly what they always do. It's rigged. It's rigged. It just crooked Hillary. They're all going to rig it, and you better watch out. So they're doing. This is just one more thing they're doing to stoke the fire. And on that note, I'm gonna head out because I gotta finish prepping for my own show.
Okay, but before you go, you've got mail.
I do.
Yes.
Please.
Michael writes in from Madison. Tom.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just get Jill or Gary to 5%, then in 2020 she'll get those federal presidential campaign grant monies, which will lead to Jill's or Gary's inevitable victory and the end of the two-party system forever. And then in January 2021, she will free us from the Trump camps. Hillary will never give us a pony, but if we just stick it out with Trump for 4 short years, ponies for everybody!
Okay, I don't like ponies. They shit too much. And the other thing on that, and riddle me this. What do you do with Speaker Ryan's Congress? What do you do with...
You realize Michael was writing with his tongue, you know, like about 6 miles into his cheek.
I know, but I'm still heated by it. And not at Michael. I'm heated by the whole idea because these supporters are not following through on everything else that is in play here. And that's why Bernie ran as a Democratic candidate. I mean, he's not a dum-dum. He did it right, but I love the email nonetheless.
He sold us out, dude.
I am a sellout. I got me some David Brock Nickel, and God damn it, I spent it on a gumball, okay? And it was a good gumball.
Probably wasn't even a green gumball.
No, it was a purple one because I like purple, damn it.
Thomas, yes. Before you go, and I know you need to run, okay, if I'm understanding you correctly,
yes.
Then if the Trumps are not making specific charges, then all of these newspaper reports that you're citing basically are smoke but no fire, simply because they're reporting on the Trump's allegations as
yes.
nebulous as they are. Well, that's just bullshit. Why even waste
that's
time with that?
Because they don't. Here's your answer. I did an interview today, and I said this in the interview. They don't want to talk about a goddamn issue. Nobody wants to talk about the Dakota pipeline or any pipeline. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that, you know, Brexit is going to screw the European economy, let alone the American economy. Nobody wants to talk about what threats Japan has made to Great Britain over Brexit because they have a large manufacturing base over there. Nobody wants to talk about, which we talked about on Some Say, if you guys listen to the show at all, about how Greg Abbott, right after Brexit happened, ran ads in England, hey, come to Texas because we have a strong economy and we know what's going on here. That's why. Nobody is willing to tell the truth. And then those idiots on the progressive side are going to say, well, this one is talking bad about this other one, so I got to go after this one and have a pig's breakfast out of it. Instead of still talking about the issues that matter, and then we wonder why the oligarchs win.
So it becomes a topic of conversation then, because the newspapers and the TV and the radio media, as they have done since Trump reared his orange head summer 2015, are not doing their job.
Exactly.
And they're wanting to focus on the horse race aspect of this and the notion that this man has a hootin' a snowball's chance of doing anything other than glorifying himself.
Scott, nail meathead. You
ooh,
nailed
baby. You said the secret word, head. Head is one of my favorite things.
It's one of my favorite pastimes. Who are you kidding? Oh, there Bob, we got to have that conversation again. I'm sorry. Jules is rolling her eyes at me.
You're doing it again.
Well, anyway, I'm
one of these days I got to have a long talk with that boy.
And I know, and one of these days we will have it. Bob, sometime I got to get you back on some say, but I know your schedule is crazy. I want to thank you.
Yeah, for and I do want to come back. I'm not deliberately avoiding you.
Oh, I know. I know your schedule is nuts, and my I thank everybody who used to come into our third hour after Mike Malloy show. I totally understand going to Malloy over me. I knew what I was doing for my own schedule when I changed schedules. But if you need a third hour of a show to listen to, the Red Road Radio Show, hosted by Lou Hastings, he is an expert on Indian country, and he will educate the hell out of you, and he does the best show. And guess what? The best part, Bob? I barely talk at all in it. Barely a peep out of me.
Oh, I'll believe that when I hear it.
But I will let you go, and y'all have a great Friday.
Well, and thanks for bringing another topic to the table. I really appreciate it, because we haven't fleshed this out yet. Have a good night and go do your prep.
Thank you, and you have a great night too.
All right, thanks, Thomas. Bye.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
One thing that bothers me is you have all these people that claim to be very religious and all that are backing Trump. And I was just sitting here, and let me do a quote here from Proverbs 6:15 and see if this doesn't isn't a good example of what Trump is. Hang on just a second. Let me quote this.
Yep. Testify, Charlie.
Let's see here. It says, "Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured he will not go unpunished." Now, doesn't that sound exactly like Donald Trump?
Sounds like he was writing about him back in the Bronze Age.
Yep.
You know, bronze is kind of close to orange.
All these people that support Trump claim to be religious, and I can't understand it. It blows my mind.
Ye generation of vipers.
He believes in the sacrament of marriage, at least, Charlie, right?
Pardon me?
He believes in the sacrament of marriage, so clearly that he's religious from that standpoint.
Yeah, repeatedly.
He's done it three times.
Yeah, it's just, I look at the people who claim to be religious in this world today, and it's just like, you know, I can't believe it. You know, 50 years ago, everybody would be laughing at them. But, you know, it's today, everybody's thinks, yeah, right on. And I can't understand it.
Well, it's difficult to wrap our minds around, but there are people voting for Donald Trump for the same reason that some of us, especially us Bernie supporters, are voting for Hillary to stop him. Not because we're in love with Hillary or think that she's the awesomest candidate ever. And I think if I hear President Not Sure refer to her as the most qualified person ever to run for president one more time, I'm going to lose it. Because that's taken a pretty big steaming dump on James Madison and Abe Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt and FDR. And, you know, himself. That drives me crazy. But they're more concerned with stopping Hillary because she's going to turn us all into liberals. I mean, there's no getting around the bubble we live in.
Well, if Hillary's going to turn us all into liberals, haven't these people ever sit down and listen to Hillary? Hillary's not the most liberal person in the world.
She's not liberal at all. But see, for 25 years, they have been told, and the poison has just flowed into their ears from Limbaugh and Fox News and Hannity and all those other filth merchants, that she's a goddamn godless liberal who wants to eat aborted fetus, and she puts aborted fetus pieces on her cereal in the morning.
I tell you what, to me, the guy named O'Reilly, he is the he is a perfect example of what a dumbass is. I mean,
we'll do it live. I'm sorry, that thing sucks. Yeah,
let's not heap aspersions on asses here, Charles.
I'm sorry.
Let's not heap aspersions on asses by calling him a dumbass. No.
Yeah, the dumbasses resemble that remark.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, happy news. We are down to $116 to go. Hopefully we can do that in the next 35 minutes. And we won't have, and we will beat the Swede, and we won't have a deficit to deal with on Monday. Because Monday will, of course, be Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge Monday.
Has Angry ever checked back in, or is he just kind of gone to the wayside?
I see a couple of tweets from him every now and then, but he hasn't called back into the program. I saw him go live on Skype a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Everybody's welcome, anytime.
He hasn't contacted me in quite a while.
Yeah.
I'm confused, people, and I really would request your assistance on this. I just happened to notice a Washington Post story, so you know you can take that to mean whatever you want. The headlines: it turns out Donald Trump was right about his defective microphone. Period. Vindication? Question mark. And then the story, and apparently. The debate commission has said that the microphone was defective.
No, Scott,
which
they didn't.
Which one?
Well, wait a minute. It says, let me scroll down here to what the comment from the debate commission was.
In case you didn't notice, he had a microphone on his lapel also.
Well, it says on Friday afternoon, the Commission on Presidential Debate confirmed that Trump did indeed have a microphone that was at least somewhat defective. Regarding the first debate, there were issues regarding Donald Trump's audio that affected the sound level in the debate hall, the commission said in an unfortunately brief one-sentence statement.
Yeah, read that again. Find me the word microphone in that.
Well, okay, that answers my question. They said there were issues regarding the audio. They didn't say where those issues were sourced.
Ta-da!
Jesus.
So he goes micro... He keeps hooting... He's a dumbass. There's that word again. He is an unrepentant, unreconstructed dumbass.
I'm curious to know, is this some NBC version of Star Trek gizmo... Trump's mic was fed through that changes what he says? Because unless that's his allegation, it's all more happy horse shit from the demented circus peanut.
So, well,
yeah, but the video doesn't lie.
Well, let's back up a minute here. Sparky, you said he had a lapel mic on.
You didn't notice it?
I'm looking at a photo of him right now. Maybe it's behind his arm. Oh, there it is. There it is. Okay, yeah.
It's on his left.
Okay,
lapel,
so
just under the flag.
Okay, so to that extent, I was wrong. It wasn't a single microphone. So there's two separate microphones. One is this is speculation, but it's born of some experience. That lapel microphone is a wireless. Wireless microphones require batteries.
Well, you can see they have there was pictures of their backs where they had the battery pack.
Right. So, but to analyze the statement real quick, there were issues regarding Donald Trump's audio that affected the sound level in the debate hall. So one of those mics was feeding the pool feed, you know, NBC, CBS, everybody didn't have their own separate camera there. That's pool coverage.
Yeah, that was the lapel mic that was feeding the media, right?
I don't know for sure. I would speculate though that
if the audio went out, if there was an issue with the audio in the hall, it could just as easily be the lapel mic, and maybe the battery died.
Well, then what's the purpose of the podium mic? Is that not, I would think that that would be strictly PA, whole audio, and I would also assume, and again I'm assuming, that the lapel mic is media feed.
Yeah, but every time he made a stupid over talk point about anything, he would move, get closer to the podium mic every time.
But he also did that in all the Republican pageants too. You can go back and see it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't understand the purpose of a microphone.
I don't know if all the networks did it, but I watched NBC when I got home and watched the recorded video of the debate of the pageant, and invariably it was a split screen, Trump on the left, Hillary on the right, from the viewer's perspective. And whenever she was talking, or when he was talking to her, he would turn slightly to his left and lean in slightly. Now, that would point him away somewhat from the podium mic. And if that podium mic is strictly audio for the hall, then there's the problem. He wasn't really talking directly into the fucking mic. It wouldn't affect the lapel mic, which was the, in my estimation, the media feed of audio, radio and TV. Does that make sense? I mean,
mystery solved, I think, Scott. He's a dumbass. He doesn't know how to use a microphone.
Well, I mean, and again, there's nothing about either of those microphones or anything else that changes what he says. If he's saying stupid shit, he could talk into two Campbell soup cans connected through a taut piece of string. And it wouldn't change what he's saying. It would change only the quality of the audio that's being heard on the far end.
Now, he describes it as the microphone was going on and off. One of the reasons... There's a million things that can go wrong in one of these setups. And one of the things that can go wrong with a wireless mic is somebody interfering with the particular frequency that mic operates on. Now, imagine, for instance, all the security communications apparatuses that are working then. Secret Service details, the cops, all of that. Even the event staff have walkie-talkies. Well, you've got to make sure that the frequencies on those wireless mics that those devices are the only devices that are operating on that frequency. He says it was going in and out. That doesn't sound like a bad battery. It sounds like maybe a bad cable. And I got a note out to John Fox, but apparently he's not reachable. At some point, maybe he'll elaborate on it. I just searched to try to find out what kind of microphones they were using. But again, well, I don't. I'm guessing by virtue of the cryptic nature of the commission statement that we're talking, where they say there were issues regarding his audio. If they had said microphone, if they had known microphone, if it was microphone, I presume they would have said microphone.
Well, and Trump was being rather specific, at least narrowing it down to microphone. He said the microphone kept going in and out. Now the question becomes, was it the one on his lapel, or was it one on the podium, or was it both? And if it was both, why didn't he say microphones? And if it was only one, why did the one that wasn't going in and out not pick up exactly what he said? That he's claiming there's an issue because a microphone was going in and out. Well, the backup rule is one of the other microphone on next to him, either the podium or the lapel, depending on which one he said went out, should have picked up what he said so that, therefore, nothing would be missed in his utterances.
Not necessarily.
Hi, can I jump in here for a sec?
Yeah, go ahead, Other Scott.
Other Scott, yeah. I worked as a sound engineer for many years.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you.
When we did, I did ABC Nightline, I did sub launchings, I did all kinds of press conferences. The lapel mic, there's two, not one. There's always two for backup. That's why you see two mics on podiums when people speak. There's two mics.
Yeah, the president always has twins.
Right, and that's because it's fail-safe. You don't have a bad cable. You don't have a bad microphone. There are, you know, three, four microphones all the time. And you generally don't use the lapel mic in live situations. That's only there for, for reinforcement. Or it could be they could use the lapel mic just to split out to the TV feed.
Well, every time I've ever done Chris Hayes' program, or anybody else's for that matter, there's been a lapel mic.
On TV, you use the lapel mic. If you're doing live sound, lapel mics generally don't work so well. You go with the hypercardioid on sitting on the desk.
So any guess what kind of mic that was? That was
my guess is it's an AKG. They make desk mics with the big long thin tube, and the condenser is on the end of the tube. That's what it looked like, but I could be wrong there.
So to quote Frank Zappa, it was not a Telefunken U-47.
No, Telefunken U-47 is a huge. It makes RE-20s look small.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just being funny.
But the idea of doing sound checks, when I did Nightline, we did sound checks 3 hours before, then went through and worked out all the little boogity boos that would show up in the sound check. And then an hour before, we would do more sound check, and we would check every mic, every cable, every situation, and then 10 minutes before show, everybody was in place and everything was hot and running. Then we had a hookup with the satellite. We had a hookup to the bird and then adjust to get the delays all in place, because audio went through landline, video went through the bird, and so you had we had to sync the video with the audio feed. We also had our IFBs that we ran. It all went through one board. But like when I did the sub launchings and they had the speakers up on stage, we also did a split. We had I had a 36 channel three-way splitter, all transformer balanced, so I could feed all the news, so I could give everybody their own output for the new for the media. And that was a direct feed off the board, went into the splitters and out to the media. They could go in, they could plug their recorders or whatever they were going to use directly into. I had a rack with 36 channels of transformer split.
Yeah. So based on all of that, could you do you want to make an informed speculation?
His mic worked fine.
Okay, so I was right.
Yeah, we heard every word he said. That was the problem, is we heard every word he said.
But okay, so was the lapel going one place and the desk mic was going another?
I don't know how they had it set up. Usually that's what we did. With the TV feed usually would run off lapel. And if we're working in a live hall, we had the microphone for the hall was a separate PA system, basically. But the TV feed was its own system. It all ran off the same board. But, you know, we split the signal out to whoever, wherever it had to go.
And since the commission is saying issues with audio and not issues with microphone,
right?
Doesn't that sort of take the mic out of the mix? No pun intended.
Very funny. Yeah, it does. We could hear him. The mic was working. So if they had issues with the audio, I don't know, bad speaker placement.
Well, and no, when he says the sound kept going in and out in the hall.
To who?
Well, to the live audience.
I didn't hear anybody in the audience saying they couldn't hear him. And believe me, people tell you when they can't hear when you're live.
Well, and there's also the matter of I've only had limited experience in a hall with the audio fed out to the people, the spectators. What you're hearing on the stage that's going out to the audience is not of the same caliber or quality acoustically. Well, isn't that correct?
We had stage monitors that we would feed everything back through IFB style to the people on the stage, because they can't hear the speakers that are actually going to the audience. The people on the stage don't hear.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. I mean, what was the mechanism, or was it even needed? I mean, how far away was he from Hillary and Lester Holt? Probably a couple feet from Hillary and probably a couple more feet from Lester Holt, based on how it looked.
Right.
If he couldn't hear what the audience was hearing generated through the from the microphones, then what went on in the hall, if that's what he's saying the problem was, shouldn't matter, because the other microphone was sending it out to TV and radio perfectly.
Right.
So who is he saying missed something?
He's saying, Scott's.
Yes.
He's saying, and he described it as a function of real time, that he could tell that his audio was going in and out, but he didn't want to say anything. The only way he would know if audio was going in or out in a hall of that size is A, if someone told him, because what Scott too just said is very true. You can't hear what's going on out in the hall. So it could be his IFB was going in and out, and he noticed that's
possible, or he's hard of hearing.
At 70? Him? Really?
Was he even wearing an IFB?
See, I thought IFBs were illegal in the debate. So they couldn't get information from backstage and fact check.
I heard last night on Colbert, he said something about the rumor going. I think it was on Colbert. He said the rumor going around that Hillary had some sort of gigantic device strapped to her back or her hip or something.
No, that's been disproven.
Well, wait a minute. They were trying to figure out whether it was a secret transmitter, a secret receiver, a secret anti-coughing mechanism.
It's already been determined. That's the power pack for her internal brain stimulator.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
it turns out it actually was body armor. It just was showing through awkwardly.
Yeah, they're not going out there without full Kevlar, right?
Right. It was awkward because she's wearing a stretchy tight dress.
Hey, you're gonna love this. I just said second Scott, and James wrote in and said second Scott. Does that mean that we've got a failsafe, Scott?
That's it.
I've got one. Here, second Scott meets second Corinthians.
No, that's two Corinthians. No. Walk into
two
a bar.
Two Corinthians, I
yeah.
mean.
Hey, big thanks going out to Randy. With 16 minutes to go in the program, we're down to $100. $100 to go. So, can we do it?
See, if they really wanted to tighten up things on the debate, what they should do is find out the ad agency that did those Isuzu commercials back in the 80s. I think that was the car where the Joe, the lying Joe.
Yeah, Joe Isuzu.
Would superimpose on the screen, he's lying. He's lying. He's lying. You know?
Right.
Don't leave it up to Trump. Let the people decide.
No, I'm convinced. I've got it nailed down. We need a Jeopardy debate. But even after a Jeopardy debate, you would still have 40% of America going, yeah, he may not know shit from Shinola, and he may not be able to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel, but he's going to make America great again. Because he's as big a dumbass as I am.
I will be so glad when this is over. But you see, the thing is, after November 8th, it won't be over. It will be just beginning.
Well, and on the morning of November 9th, we'll start talking about the 2020 election.
Especially now with this mic crap going on. I thought you guys were just joking, but I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's a legitimate news story.
And I've seen it at the Atlantic, the BBC, the New York Post, the Washington Post, as Scott One mentioned. And they're all getting it wrong because they're all saying microphone. They're all just repeating. And see, this is a microcosm of the problem this entire campaign has had. Trump says there was a problem with my microphone when Trump wouldn't know a goddamn microphone from a Martian. All right? But instead of critically examining his assertion, the goddamn for-profit media just picks it up and says, yep, the commission said there was a problem with the microphone when the commission didn't even say microphone.
And this could just give him an out, Bob, and I said this last week for him to say, screw it, I'm not doing any more debates. Rat Boy Giuliani already floated it, so this may be it.
Based on the numbers that came off the debate, he's got nothing to lose by not doing it.
They will try to make hay with it.
Well, Hillary...
If he drops out of the debate process...
He's going to be at the debate whether he shows up or
yeah,
not.
Well, Hillary will hand him his ass like she did at the last one, but this will give him a good chance to say, or a good excuse to say, I'm not doing it, it's rigged.
That's what he's been saying
right from the start. Yeah.
But I think Hillary can make more hay if he did that than Trump could, because except maybe to his true believers, it shows Trump to be the sniveling, whiny little small fingered fellow that he has been all along.
Or as Bill Maher says, the whiny little bitch.
Yeah, I was trying to think of that, whiny little bitch, indeed.
Well, at least the Atlantic mitigated some of the bullshit. They said Trump's comments were viewed with skepticism. He's blamed bad equipment for gaffes in the past. The feed on national television and in the filing center, where journalists attending the debate watched, had Trump loud and clear. And besides, the critique of Trump's performance was largely about the content of what he said, not the audibility of it. But the thing is, he knows how to manipulate an audience. And so Emory and Marveline are sitting there screaming at the television from their Barca loungers, it were rigged!
It was rigged!
They were a-trying to take the election from him because it's Crooked Hillary.
That's right, Emory.
Yep, they took the election from him because they actually broadcast what he said.
Hey, we got two folks in the room we haven't heard from. Jeremy's been here longest, so I'll go to Jeremy. What's up, Jeremy? Jeremy? No? Okay. Staying within the letter J of the alphabet, Jenny.
Hello.
Hello.
I just thought I'd stop in and say hello.
I'm so glad you did. I almost thought I heard glass clink.
Oh, that was my... I've got like a... Instead of a mouse, I have like a pen.
Ah, okay.
And I'm still going to send you the those glasses. I'm like the biggest mailer on the planet. I've got like three things to mail. I'm going to mail them soon. I promise.
Well, I look forward...
I'm here too. I just pulled over to eat.
Ah, okay.
What?
Jeremy said he just pulled over to eat. What's for supper?
Taco Hell.
Oh, bad, Jeremy. Bad.
I know, but there's only one in the state, and I was working near it, so what the hell?
Oh, my God. You live in the only state in the union that only has one Taco Hell.
I know. It's world disaster over here.
Actually, you know, that's not a flaw of Vermont. That's a feature, Jeremy.
Yeah, but try to say that about McDonald's, and you're wrong. McDonald's owns this state. There's probably one every quarter block here.
Ugh.
Can I share something lighthearted to break the mood?
By all means.
We just had a man cave moment here. Grady, the lab I've been playing with him. I don't know if anybody's been seeing.
Yeah, I've been watching lab cam.
We're on through the webcam. Back and forth. Well, we're in here. Me and Brian are talking. All of a sudden, this gray squirrel comes from the side of the north door and starts heading out towards the big oak tree. Grady turned around, saw that squirrel, and boom! It was like the and that squirrel was up that oak tree so damn fast.
That weren't no dumb... Mrs. Squirrel didn't raise no dummy. But being a lab, he probably just wanted to play with it. But the squirrel did not know that.
Well, he didn't. He probably wouldn't know what to do with it if he caught it. he would have brought it back and wanted to play catch with it or something. But anyway, I just want to throw something lighthearted in there before we.
Well, and you know, labs just make you smile by their very existence. That's like, you know, I've mentioned...
Ball throwers, the greatest invention that man ever came up with.
Have you seen the automatic ones that dogs can make go for themselves?
Yeah.
Just keeps them busy all day long, and like if you have to leave them at home to go to work, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Our neighbor lab meets me every evening. I always have to have some sort of a snack with me in the car. He meets me every evening. And his name is Bruno, and he meets me at the car door, and we have a snack, and then he patrols the property all night long and keeps the deer away and barks at things, and now he's got a buddy. The other dog from the same place has decided to hang out with us, and her name is Cookie, and she's a Rottweiler, and she is a very frightening looking dog until she, like, tries to climb up into the car and, you know, lick you to death. But she has to have a snack too. So usually when I'm, you know, when I'm heading home from picking up Margie, which I have to do tonight too, I'll stop at McDonald's or Wendy's and get an order of French fries. And just, you know, share a few fries with the kids. You know, they don't care. You know, they don't want ketchup. They don't care. And no, Tracy, they don't have mayonnaise on their fries either. Tracy's not in the room, but I just wanted to know that we're thinking about her.
Oh, and Bob, for yes. Food porn.
Yeah.
My stepson and his wife just came back from the coast over in Brookings, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Where they did a little fishing.
Oh, my.
So we're having a fish ride.
Ooh, what kind of fish?
Tonight.
We say fish in West Virginia. Fish.
I don't. But they're setting it up. They're deep frying them in oil.
That'll be right tasty. I need to give you the tartar sauce recipe.
What's that?
I need to give you the tartar sauce recipe.
Oh.
Unlike any tartar sauce you've ever had. A little late now, but remind me later and I will.
Well, Bob, can I add to the food porn?
Jump right in.
I had a box of Maryland blue crabs delivered here, overnighted from FedEx today. So
look
forward to that.
You got the drawn butter ready to go, and
yes, sir.
Now,
do you use
do you use Old Bay or do you use Zatarain's?
Old Bay is the only way to go, Bob. Got to go with Old Bay and some corn and some bread with, you know, it's good eating food porn.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be a good diversion from this nightmare that we're up against, you know.
Hey, you gotta step back and take a little pleasure. So you steaming them tonight?
No, they came already cooked. I'm just gonna reheat them.
Oh, nice! Saved you all the trouble. You don't have to listen to them scream. They scream, you know.
Yeah, just like the lobsters. Yeah, they do. Yeah, it's kind of disturbing, but you know, you eat hamburger, so.
Can you still hear the lambs, Clarice?
But we're going to make it, Bob, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The Swede, I am happy to report, is beaten.
Nice.
Hey, Bob.
And thank you very kindly to Darlene for just knocking down the last of it. I really thank you very on behalf of all of us. Thank you, Darlene. And thanks, everybody, including you, Steve, and Jeremy, and Carol, who got us started, Tony, earlier today. One and all, thank you.
Well, Bob, we appreciate you and everything you do. And I know you don't like this. It makes you uncomfortable. But we need your voice now more than ever. So please keep up the good work, my friend.
I'm going to try. I'm real excited. I get my Agnes back this weekend.
Nice.
And this is going to be a much more pleasant place to be with her back here. She has done yeoman granny work, and this is part of the, you know, this is part of the job of being a grandmother. But God, it's like late August that she went, you know. So, I've missed her ferociously, and I'll be on the road and driving over Sunday and driving back Sunday. And sorting out the Margie's work schedule in between, so that'll be interesting.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, I do a lot of running these days. Margie got off work. They gave her a split schedule today, so she worked like 2 to 5, and then she worked 6 to 11. So she had to clock out for an hour because Walmart.
That's insane. Are they that damn tight? Yeah, I guess they are. It is Walmart after all.
Yeah, they are. God.
Don't even get you started, right?
Yeah.
Well, my friend, it's about ready to wrap this thing down.
Yeah, it is time to go. Yep. Let's get on out of here. Thanks everybody again, and thanks for the participation. It was a rousing good call. Don't beat yourself, Scott. Beat yourself up, Scott. One for getting flustered. It happens to the best of us. And I presume the conversation will continue, especially after Malloy at 11:05 p.m. Eastern time. Is that the case? Is that the case, Sparky?
I'm not sure, Bob. I got company.
Oh, true. Well, we'll see how it plays. But at any rate, thanks everybody. A brand new week, a brand new month begins with More and Monday. Curiously, on Monday. Thanks everybody. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. Jim, I'm sorry we couldn't get. I don't know what happened with the stress line, but I'm sorry we didn't have your conversational additions to the discussion this evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go, our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Join us October 17th in Charleston at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection as we rally to save Coal River Mountain. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a great weekend.